people. Starship Rokan Show. Off for another day of broadcast insolence. And, man, we got a show for you today. Today. Well, I like when current events conspire to give us a lot of stuff to talk about. And they certainly have today. We've got Ben Bradley going to join us here. The coronavirus has hit Wisconsin. So they're all freaked out up there, as we are freaked out here. The Lincoln Park High School investigation has gotten wackier. We'll also talk to Dr. Kristen Brashaw, who is the president of Global Virus Network, about the coronavirus, the reported death of the doctor who was the whistleblower on coronavirus in China. They're now pulling that off the scoreboard and saying that he has not yet died, but he is in critical condition. And we'll talk a little bit about that, because we've seen pictures of this guy and he is in intensive care, and the Chinese medical system is not unsophisticated. It has a level of sophistication in many places that is similar to the United States. So it's not the kind of thing where you're thinking, oh, well, you know, people are getting sick there. This guy was getting the best level of medical care. What does that say about this virus? And what does it say about how deadly it can be, even though the death toll still stands at about double what the flu death toll would be internationally? Is there something, are people predestined to get sicker with it than others? We'll talk about all of that. And what does that mean? Oh, we were at the Hawks game last night. We were there watching when the greatest theft, well, since the Brinks robbery, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a greater theft, occurred from the National Hockey League officials against our beloved Blackhawks. All hell broke loose in the United Center. Doc Emmerich, the great Doc Emmerich, who was on the call for NBC Sports Network, the national telecast last night, Rivalry Wednesday, he will be here to talk about what he saw and what happened there, because it was such an unusual moment in history. And also on the program, we have got Richard Marx here, famed Grammy Award-winning artist, 30 million records sold. He's Chicago's very own Richard Marx. He'll be in studio with us in the 6 o'clock hour. He's going to play News or Ruse. And he's got a couple of new songs out, and we'll give you a little taste of what those are, including one that just popped into the top 20 in Adult Contemporary. You know, 30 years after the beginning of his career. Pretty amazing story right there. So that's all coming your way. And I think you want to play News or Ruse with him, because there's a guy, sort of like our own Lauren Lapka, doesn't like to be wrong. And it's very fun when I'd like to, the two of them would really make great competitors with each other. So we look forward to that.
Well, that's just not fair, though, with News or Ruse. It's so hard to know what's real.
No, it's going to be a lot of fun. I foresee actually a fist fight actually breaking out between the two of you before it's all said and done.
Yeah,
Hold me back.
I want to see them go head-to-head for sure. I hope they're the last two teams standing.
I do, too, because I think that they would be a lot of fun going after each other. That would be really something. All right, that is what is coming up in the program. Now, coming up right after this, Ben Bradley from the WGN-TV newsroom is going to be holding forth with us. And as I said, we got a couple local stories, and including, and I think this is important, Charlie Beck, the interim police superintendent here in Chicago, went to the cameras today to talk about the CTA platform shootings. There have been a number of them over the last number of weeks, and there was a particularly awful one. And these, in some cases, seem to be random victims, people who are just being robbed and either too slow or reluctant to give up whatever they're being robbed of and getting shot. There have been some other cases here that seem to be people who know each other, or they're involved in some other nefarious thing, and then one pulls out a gun and shoots the other. But at least in this particular case that we saw down on the UIC campus a couple of mornings ago, that does not appear to be the case. So we will talk to Ben Bradley about what the interim police superintendent is doing about that, because it's just another one of those things that makes the world wacky. And in the top 5 at 5, we'll play some of what the president said today in his victory lap event at the White House. Very dramatic. It was he came out to hail to the chief, full band, whole thing. A lot of his supporters, cabinet members, people who had been with him, his legal team during the impeachment, and he held up the newspapers. But earlier in the day, he went to a prayer breakfast and took on prayer, which I thought was really interesting. He went to the National Prayer Breakfast and it told the audience he doesn't like when people wrap themselves in God when they think they're going to do the wrong thing. And he doesn't like people say they pray for other people and when they don't mean it. We live in interesting times. I think that is the only way that I can really describe this. Lauren Lapka has a WGN traffic and weather. Roconcho, right here, 720 WGN. Ben Bradley joins us from the WGN-TV newsroom.
Hello, Ro.
Hello, Benjamin. A lot going on today. I don't know if you've noticed. All right, let's talk about, let's start with the Lincoln Park High School saga that continues to get wackier and wackier and wackier. Now there's somebody else who just got whacked, right?
Yes, the woman who was brought in just a couple of days ago after the principal and assistant principal were pulled out of the school, as well as the basketball coach and the boys' varsity basketball season suspended. The woman who was brought in to create a stable environment, now out after a video surfaced where she appears to be asking a student for an ID. When the student pulled the ID away, she appears to touch the student on the face briefly. She wasn't hitting the student or anything like that from what we've been able to determine. But nonetheless, Chicago Public Schools pulled that newest administrator at Lincoln Park High School out of the school after determining she was, quote, not a good fit.
Yeah.
And students walked out once again today at Lincoln Park High School.
Yeah. She was determining that she was not a good fit either, too, right? I mean, it was like one of those situations where there's so much stress in this environment right now with the students being on edge and the faculty, and there not being enough information about what actually happened that has come out.
Well, in their defense, Chicago Public Schools did have a meeting with parents a couple of nights ago where they laid out their concerns and the reasons why the principal, the assistant principal, and the basketball coach were essentially suspended. I mean, there are allegations there. Four investigations are underway. Allegations that there was athletic recruiting violations, that there was financial mismanagement, that there was this trip to Detroit where there may have been some inappropriate sexual conduct, we don't know between who, and then there was social media activity, there were witnesses that were intimidated, and then some adults apparently didn't report as required what had happened. So it's a hot mess
now,
at Lincoln Park High
when
School.
When we say adults, we're talking about not parents, right? Or are we talking about, we're talking about
school staff.
School
staff.
Okay. Right.
And this was an unsanctioned trip. And look, you know, Chicago Public Schools is in the unenviable position of, you know, they have this scandal involving a popular boys basketball team, a popular coach, a principal and assistant principal who were well liked. You have students where emotions are running very, very high. And CPS in the last few years has been on its heels trying to show that it's sensitive to any allegation of misconduct, because you remember the Tribune was first to report that there were reports of sexual misconduct, there were reports of abuse by teachers, there was and staff members that went not only uninvestigated but just languished. That kids who were reporting misconduct by adults were made to feel as though they weren't taken seriously or that they had done something wrong. And so CPS, you know, has really been defensive. And I was actually just talking with a friend of mine who coaches a private Christian school girls basketball team. And he's a 60-year-old guy, a former pastor. And his phone was blowing up. And I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Oh, I'm texting with some of the girls on my basketball team." And I just kind of jokingly said, "Well, if you work for CPS, that would be against the rules, because they developed a social media policy and this communication policy in response to all that's gone on that says teachers and staff members can have absolutely no contact with students beyond district email." And this friend of mine who's the coach out in the suburbs said, boy, doesn't that do a disservice to students because of a couple of bad choices and horrible actions. Because in a lot of cases, who is it that becomes the trusted adult for a student going through difficult times? It is a teacher. And you can't communicate?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We never had contact with our teachers.
Oh, I did.
You did? Yeah, home phone numbers.
I can remember in high school when I was going through a particularly difficult, kind of scary period, I went to one of those teachers.
But
I went to his house, and he welcomed me inside. And you know, he's still a good friend of mine. We've since joked like, "Oh, you couldn't do that today."
That's interesting.
But to have a rule that says you can only talk to your teacher in the school building or at a school event, and via school email, and you know anything else can get you in big trouble. To me, that's trying to solve a problem through a huge blanket policy.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, and generally, blanket policies don't work. They don't hold up. Whether or not they're better off as a structure is a separate argument.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say that teachers can't have contact with the students outside, here's my phone number. If you're having problems at home, let me know. You know, in a benign way, not in a creepy way.
Right.
Right? Or in a benevolent way. Not a creepy way. And so that seems to make sense that it would happen, but I also understand why they really do want to restrict it.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to, an era in which you didn't have, the teachers didn't have phone numbers published. You know, you weren't able to reach out to them outside of the school, essentially, unless you ran into them at a bar or a strip club. Or at the bus stop, where are you going now? Are you going home? Unless that happened, that was pretty unusual. All right. Well, we'll continue to watch.
Yeah, we'll have much more on that coming up today at 4 o'clock. Also discussing the coronavirus, a confirmed case now in Wisconsin, which is the 12th case in the U.S., including those two that we have here in the Chicago area.
Do we know if it's somebody who had been in the Wuhan province?
The patient had come into contact with someone with the virus while traveling in China.
While traveling in China.
Right.
It's a person from China.
But we do those cases.
Traveling from China.
Right. So the suburban Chicago case was somebody who had been in Wuhan, comes home, had contact with her husband, and transmitted it to her husband that way. So it is very communicable.
Yes.
Even after a visit to China.
Right.
Not necessarily just, while you're there at ground zero of this epidemic. Hey, can I also bring up this article? It's getting a ton of comments.
And before we do that, I just want to say, I know where you're going with this, and I want to talk about this a little bit later on, so I'm glad you're bringing this up. But one of the things that is important here is there is this story about the whistleblower doctor in Wuhan province who was the first person to go to government authorities and say, hey, I think what we have here is a pandemic outbreak. We have a species jumper, as people call it, of a virus, and that could be a really big problem. And the government officials in the province tried to cover it up.
Yeah, China not known for saying, "Hey, thanks for coming forward with a major problem that could affect large parts of our population."
They don't like anything that's critical of the government. So I look forward to that here in the United States. So here's the thing that I think is important. That doctor eventually contracted the virus. Now, there was a report overnight into this morning that he had died. And he was getting proper medical care. I mean, there were pictures of him in intensive care in a hospital.
Yep.
And
he had contracted the virus while he was working at Wuhan Central Hospital.
Right.
And then there were reports overnight that he died, and then they got pulled off,
and now they're back on. Now, the Associated Press has just, within the last half hour, pushed a story that says that he has, in fact, died.
Yeah, BBC also reporting that, citing the People's Daily, which is obviously your number one source for news in China.
Mm-hmm. So
I believe that's their slogan.
Yes, I'm the film critic for the People's Daily, by the way. I love the video version of Shen Yun. I just love that.
I laughed.
That's all I do.
I laughed. I cried. It was better than cats.
Yes. All right. So this story, we're going to have a virus expert coming on just in a few minutes here. Global Virus Network president is going to join us to talk about what this is and what this means, because it's getting pretty scary in Asia. Well, can it get scary here? Will it burn itself out like the SARS virus did? Remember, we were talking about the SARS virus a decade and a half ago, and everybody was like, oh, this is going to be bad. And then all of a sudden it disappeared, essentially.
Right.
It burned itself out. All right. Now, go ahead. I want you to tell this story.
So Mary Wisniewski of the Tribune wrote a column. She's normally their transportation writer, but she wrote about death and how we respond to it. You and I have, you know, been through this recently. With the death of my own dad in the last year and a half.
Right.
And this, what she wrote about, I thought so beautifully, was what do you do for somebody's family who's died? Do you show up at the wake? Do you show up at the funeral? Is that really important? Because there's some research from the Funeral Homeowners Association that says fewer people are having wakes and attending wakes. And it got me thinking about, what do you want for your own funeral? Because every wake I've been to, because that's the way you and I think, Ro.
It's a feel-good story right. of the week. Ben, no, thank you very much for bringing it up. Well, let me see.
Yeah.
Well, first of all,
my mom called me, by the way, very concerned after I posted about this.
Because you and I are traveling to a third world country next week. And
Benji, are you sick? Is there something you need to tell me?
We've already decided that we're not coming back from that trip. All right. I want to talk about this a little bit later on, because one of the issues is the funeral for the dead or is it for the other living who are there? Well, if it is for the other living who are there, let me just say one thing. They should get the dead guy out of the room. That would
very
be
very true. And you shouldn't make those grieving people stand up there for six hours shaking hands.
Yes, but like, next to the stiff. That's not a good thing to do.
No. Oh, he looks so good.
Looks like he's sleeping. He smells funny, though. All right. Thank you very much, Ben. We'll see you on the WGN TV News starting at 4 o'clock.
We'll discuss our funeral arrangements later.
God.
Maybe on a trip to the third world nation.
I do not like this. The way
on an airplane. What could go wrong?
All right. Thank you, Ben. Yeah. We've got the news coming your way in 2 minutes. Ro Khan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right. Christian Bruchot is with us, and he is the president of Global Virus Network, and we're talking about the coronavirus here. Doctor, one of the things that confuses me today, there have been mixed reports about this doctor in Wuhan province who was the whistleblower, the so-called whistleblower for this virus. He'd gone to government officials saying that he was starting to see it at the hospital and concerned that it might have been a virus that had jumped from one species to humans and that it was potentially very dangerous. He was shut down by them. He eventually contracted the virus. There were conflicting reports that he was alternately either dead or in critical condition, and now the Associated Press says that, yes, he has, in fact, died from the disease. 34 years old, what is in seemingly good health, and a doctor in a hospital, in intensive care in a hospital in China, which has sufficient life support capabilities. Should we be concerned that this is a more virulent virus than we first thought?
Well, thank you for having me, and this is an excellent question. This is really the question. We need to have more data about not only this case, but we know that we have at least something like 500, and we will have more, unfortunately, deaths. So what is really the clinical condition of all these people? I mean, are we speaking of individuals who are fragile, who show some frailties? We do know that we have some young people within these people, these individuals. We have to remember that even with the flu, with influenza, very unfortunately, each year, you do have some young people who die of influenza. So the honest answer is we don't know, but this is a key question to really get as soon as possible a good clinical, I would say, pattern of those patients who have really suffered from severe disease. But to answer more precisely, it means that we are facing a virus which at least in some conditions can be very dangerous. So it's a situation where clearly the mortality rate is much less than from the SARS. We are talking presently of something around 2.1% for this coronavirus as compared to something like 9.5% for the SARS. but 2.1 is still very high. And it means that at least in certain conditions, yes, you can have young people with very severe disease.
One of the things about this particular virus is how quickly it is spreading. It seems to be of a particularly contagious nature. Can you explain the mechanism that makes this more contagious than even the common cold, apparently?
It's too early. We will have to really evaluate how the... You see, these viruses, they are viruses which infect animals, mostly bats. And then you have some mutations which change the receptor, which allows the virus to penetrate into the cells. And clearly, the way the virus can really infect the cell can have a profound impact on the severity. Now, unfortunately, we don't know the answer to all these very important question. You can have also some viral genes which would be more active in the human cells than expected. Yeah. You have the immune response to the virus, which can be also very important. So all of these, we need to get from what's going on in China, because fortunately, we don't have so many cases outside China so far.
Doctor, as president of the Global Virus Network, are you getting any kind of cooperation from Chinese officials?
Well, yes. I mean, you see, as you said, I mean, I'm a professor at the University of South Florida, and I'm president of the Global Virus Network. And the Global Virus Network is really a network of scientists all over the world. And I can tell you that we are really merging all efforts, including with our Chinese colleagues. So, yes, we get information. Now, we get scientific information, I would say.
Yes.
For the other, more, I would say, political, I would say, if I may, information, it's another story because it's not at our level. But this is the strength of networks, you see, by the way, such as the Global Virus Network, to be independent, of governments.
Understood. We have about a minute left, and I want to understand this. On Monday, there was news that there may be a breakthrough on a vaccine for this, and that seemed to ease tensions in the global markets that have been really battered by the concept of the Chinese economy slowing down and exports and you know, all the tentacles that economy has around the world. Is that true? Is there a vaccine that is in development, and do we know that there has been any success with that thus far?
There are several vaccines which are under development. The one you are referring to, I believe, is the one of the University of Queensland, but you have at the Institut Pasteur, you have also companies which are extremely active on this. I'm absolutely convinced that we are going to get a vaccine. But the problem is when, because you cannot get a vaccine immediately. That's always the same problem. And what I really hope is that this epidemic will have slowed down before we get the vaccines. And these vaccines, the way I see it, will be extremely useful to prevent, you see, the next epidemics, and we are going to learn a lot for the future. But for the present epidemics, I really doubt that we will have a vaccine before the epidemic slows down. When is it going to slow down? We don't know exactly. We hope that with the spring and the summer, we don't know exactly, but we hope that something around April or May, maybe before, but we have to be careful.
Christian Breschow, who is the president of Global Virus Network, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Let's check in now with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and in the skies? Rokan Show right here in 720 WGN. We were talking about science with a doctor who sounded very scientific. Actually, it was like Louis Pasteur. It was like talking to him. So you know when John Williams talks to dead presidents? We talk to dead scientists on this program. Anyway, hopefully there's a little bit of optimism in the, at least in the vaccine world when it comes to this particular coronavirus that is scaring the world right now. But we will see. It would take months and months and months before it would actually be widely available in anywhere in the world. But we do have, you know, there hope. As the doctor was just saying, I know it's a little hard to understand him from time to time, but the doctor was saying that he and his fellow scientists believe that there may be a slowdown in this in the next 2 months, and then that'll give a little bit of a breather and the opportunity for these for vaccines to be developed. And there is a lot of optimism that vaccines can be developed. Now, in another story from science, I think that we have just learned something that could change your life. Do you talk to yourself in your head? Is there a constant narrative going on in your head?
All the time.
Unfortunately, yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever spill that out loud?
Depends on how many drinks I've had.
I don't think so. My mom does all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, as it turns out, science has found that that there are actually two different internal narrative phenomena, and humans have one or the other. So there are people who just have a constant kind of, you know, rolling conversation inside their own head. It's just moving, it's moving, it's moving. Sometimes it keeps you from being able to listen to things that are happening around you, right? You get caught in your own conversation. Then there are people who must then talk to themselves and discuss the issue, throw out a few words and then have it come back. They have to hear it. It doesn't just happen within their brain. And these are two distinctive personality types. You are either one or you are the other. A 26-year-old from Salt Lake City, for example, says she didn't even know her internal dialogue existed until she saw a tweet about it. Because there was a Kyle Plant emoji. Thank God all the good science is coming from Twitter, by the way. Everything you need to know that's important in the world comes from Twitter. Said, fun fact, some people have an internal narrative and some don't. As in, some people's thoughts are like sentences that they hear, and some people just have abstract, nonverbal thoughts and have to consciously verbalize them in order to process them in their head. Isn't that interesting? It's like, because I'm just constantly listening to a stream of sentences in my head. Sometimes from me, sometimes from other people. Sometimes I'm hearing my mother scream at me. Sometimes I'm hearing I'm hearing coaches or teachers or other people telling me what I should be doing. Keep my left arm straight. I hear that all the time. What are you doing in there? Why are you in the bathroom so long? I hear that all the time. But then there's others who don't actually have the words in their head. They don't have the sentences in their head.
What do they have?
They have abstract, nonverbal images in their head. It's like Picasso in their head. And then they will verbalize them. We need to get your mother on the phone is what we need, Lauren, because if she talks to herself, right? That's how you know.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the people who talk to themselves, it's not they're not crazy. It's the same thing as having the internal conversation. The only way, though, that they can process it or legitimize it or put it into action is to blurt it out and then come back and hear it themselves. How crazy is that?
That is crazy, because I'm having like a conversation in my head 24/7, basically.
Same.
You're having a conversation in your head while there's a conversation going on outside of your mouth, too, right?
Yeah.
It's like it's a simultaneous deal.
Right.
Does it say what's more common?
The conversation in your head, it appears to be more common.
So are you more artsy if you have the visual effects in your head versus thinking out loud and talking to yourself? Do we know what type of person?
Now, some people, according to Dr. Curtis Reisinger, also probably has an accent we wouldn't understand. He says it goes well beyond two types. Internal dialogue is established early in the formative years when children begin to learn words and sentences as a mode of communication. It's determined by a number of factors, such as environment, genetics, and upbringing. What kind of experiences you're exposed to as a child, or injuries and trauma. That's why there's a lot of screaming in my head. That's one of the problems that I have. I'm having an internal dialogue of a lot of different highfalutin words, and then every once in a while, just a very loud primal scream. Am I okay? Doc, am I okay? Sometimes your inner dialogue is not your best friend, the doctor says. A lot of people like to use a scenario of your mother or father yelling at you and incorporate that as a part of an internal monologue.
God, this is so accurate.
Just describing that right now, is that's exactly what it is? But it's variable. Your inner voice can also be a coaching or mentoring one. That's rare, though, I find. I mean, I know I've tried that. You know, like a mantra. I've been told to try that. You know, I'm okay, and I'm going to be fine, and the positive forces of the universe are propelling me forward, or something like that. And I get about halfway through it, and I hear my mother yelling at me, "Go do the dishes!" Now, the advice of the doctor is for people grappling with this phenomenon, don't overthink. Well, I mean, okay, if you have an internal dialogue that's constantly going, how can you not overthink?
That's all I do is overthink.
That's what it does.
It's so hard to sleep at night.
It's not as black and white as the tweet would suggest. How do you know what you know unless you've never known it? Which quite honestly, I don't want to ask myself that question because I don't even understand it. Because then that's going to start a whole other internal dialogue. All right, 312-981-7200. I'll diagnose you right now. Melanie, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Melanie.
Hi, everybody. How you guys doing?
Couldn't be better.
Good. I have both what you're talking about, Ro. And I don't hear screaming or anything like that or my parents saying something. I just have, like, a lot of stories. And a lot of times they roll around in my head and there are times, and I didn't even realize this a while back, I was talking, and I was standing in a room. My daughter walked in, and she said, "Who are you talking to?" And I went, "Oh, my gosh." I didn't even realize until she pointed it out. So I do have both, and I just have a lot of things to say and think from years and years ago, and it's there, and it's, you know, it's different, and I think it's creative when you have that.
You know, I have found myself more recently than not actually talking out loud to myself, which I never used to do. And I started to wonder, is it like, you know, is it, I'm living alone? Is it because I'm talking to myself and because I need to have somebody talking back to me?
I think it's because we're getting older.
Yeah, maybe. It might be that.
Or, I didn't do that when I was young.
Yeah, or sometimes I have been known to talk to the TV. Now, during sports, I think everybody talks to the TV. I think that's normal. I think that's healthy, right? You're yelling at the TV for whatever it is. Sometimes you yell at the news. Sometimes you yell at other things. Like, oh, come on! Right? That sort of reaction is normal. But to actually start to have a conversation with the television and hope the television is going to respond in kind, that could be a problem.
Now, this is the other thing, and this is kind of weird. There are times when I've been where I haven't felt well for a little bit, and when I'm, like, walking, all of a sudden, it's like another voice. I'll hear them up above, and it'll be my voice, but it'll be a stronger voice, going, "How is this possible?" And then the younger voice would say, and that's me saying to the other voice, "I don't know." And I'm usually not like that, but yeah, it's happened when I wasn't feeling well. And then the other voice would say, the strong voice, "How did we get here?" And I would go, "I don't know." And then all of a sudden the other voice would say, "We're better than this. This has got to pass, and you'll get through it."
Melanie, I just have to say one thing. If you utter one more sentence, I have to charge you $130 for this session. All right, I got to run. Melanie, thank you very much. That's really interesting.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. All right. Very interesting. Thank you
Thanks.
For taking my call.
You're
All
welcome.
Right, bye.
Thanks for taking part in our therapy session right here. We got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Coming your way in 2 minutes. All right, we had trouble. Big trouble last night for our beloved Blackhawks.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks.
Doc Emmerich was behind the microphone last night for NBC Sports. And by the way, can I just say what a gigantic fan. We were just talking with John Weideman last night, actually, and I was just talking about you, Doc. about the importance of the, I think the hockey play-by-play is the trickiest sports play-by-play job you could possibly have, because it moves so fast. You have to explain where the puck is, what's moving, and you do such an amazingly beautiful job of doing it. I am a huge, huge fan of yours, Doc Emmer.
Well, so kind of you. I think it's the hardest job to do on radio, but it's the easiest of the sports to do on television, and here's why. We're describing continuous action, and we don't have to wait for players to unpile. We don't have to wait between pitches, and we don't have innumerable timeouts late in the game. So there's not a whole lot we have to think about to fill time with. John has a lot more to do, and he does it beautifully because it's describing so much on radio, position, side of the ice, and all of that. You can see it on television. But it is so kind of you to say it. We do have Eddie and Brian to bail us out, especially when there are controversial calls and inexplicable goals that are scored. That reminded me of one that perhaps Hawks fans will remember from a seventh-game playoff series at United Center between the Blackhawks and Detroit, when Nicholas Jalmerson, and that's fun for a lot of Hawks fans to think of him in a Chicago uniform,
yes.
Nicholas Jalmerson scored a goal that looked like it was ending the game, and it was waved off because a couple of players, one from each team, got coincidental minor penalties behind the play, and it wiped it out. Later, Brent Seabrook scored to end the series in overtime, but everybody thought that was it, and it got called back because of penalties.
So last night, a similar thing happened to the Blackhawks. 1 minute left in the game, the score tied at one. And it appeared that Kajula had scored this goal, and then all of a sudden they're stopping. The referees are all getting together. They're in a huddle. They're talking to each other. And we were not able to hear your call last night because we were actually at the game. In the stadium, people, and then they're looking up, and you didn't see anything really in the replay. We couldn't, at least in the stadium, see anything in the replay. And apparently, what had happened was that a ref had blown a whistle, but nobody seemed to hear the whistle that stopped the play before the goal was scored?
Well, what happened, and for us, initially, because it was on the near side of the ice, right up near the boards, it was blocked from our vision, but Eddie nailed it. It was ruled a hand pass, but the whistle didn't come right away. It was not audible to a lot of people. And then, of course, the goal was scored. And then the announcement was very confusing, because all it was, the whistle had stopped play. How about you just add a couple of words like stop play because of a hand pass? And that would have given us a lot of reason to show the evidence. But Eddie cut right to the chase and showed the play and indicated that this is probably the reason that the goal was disallowed. Today, the league had reviewed it and did declare that the referee, who was one of our newer referees, had done quite a bit of work in the American League, but hadn't done a lot in the NHL, Peter McDougal, actually did make the right call, because possession, even though it did graze the stick, grazing the stick does not indicate possession. And thus it was, in fact, a hand pass, and so the right call was made. And probably through inexperience, the apology that was made to Jonathan Toews on the ice and to the coaching staff would have been premature. So all of it is confusing, but the league did also acknowledge today that the whistle was way late, and the announcement that was made to all of the paying customers, which I think get lost in this. You're paying the price of admission. You deserve to know what's going on. And the announcement was confusing and probably wasn't concise enough or didn't at least give enough information. So all of that led to incredible confusion and anger. Because of what eventually happened.
Yes, anger, Doc Emmerich. Anger, although
yes.
I will say there was a bunch of us were standing around near the concourse last night and licking our wounds, but the Hawks have had 4 points out of 3 games, and I'll take that right now.
Yes.
That's important. So,
these things do, and Jeremy Colliton was right in his press conference, these things do even out. You hope, for the Hawks' sake, that they even out in this season and not sometime in the future, because that is a point, and it's always the argument that's made with a referee at center ice after a controversial call is made. we may need this point on April the 4th.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, I know.
It may not be said that way, but they are always reminded. And, of course, when you are arguing at center ice after a call like this, it's not for April 4th. It's for the next one that comes up in that game.
Yeah, that's true. All right, the great Doc Emmerich, thank you for explaining that, what happened last night. Making us all feel better.
I cleared it
oh,
up
no,
it's
fine. Better than I can do.
Aftermath.
All right, Doc, we'll talk to you soon. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, Doc Emmerich, NBC Sports, right there. Greatest hockey caller in television history. Let us now check in with the greatest traffic and weather caller and the toughest human I know, Lauren Lapka.
Well, thank you. High praise.
The rise and fall of the policy kings, how penny and nickel bets once helped power the black community. Tonight on WGN TV News at 9.
From the living color to movie scripts to all the six to J, no to this.
Uh-oh. This is from the halftime show on Sunday at the Super Bowl. Right? It was one of the best lip syncs you've ever seen.
I hope all the children that were subjected to the graphic nature of the halftime show have recovered from it.
I am glad you brought that up, Kevin Powell, because that is the story of the hour. There is a man who is suing the NFL over crotch shots shown during the Super Bowl halftime show.
He was a hero. I was so offended by it. I couldn't even watch.
Dave Dobenmeyer, Christian activist, clearly trying to get attention for his podcasts. Now, who isn't? By the way, the best movies, the Oscar edition, available right now where all fine podcasters hold. Richard Roper and Rokon. Absolutely free. And commercial free. Listen to this. This guy, an Ohio man, says he had to turn off the halftime show because he didn't want to let the spirit in his house. He's angered about the crotch shots, and he took to Facebook to ask for a lawyer to help him file a lawsuit for pandering pornography and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. I tuned in to watch a football game. I did not tune in to watch a porn show.
Imagine his reaction after the nip slip incident.
Yeah, well, I mean, he might have been 12 during that. That might be what
he's scarred from.
Scarred him. He said before launching into a very creepy analogy about having attractive daughters, now he can't bring them to school to pole dance and to twerk. Apparently, that's a whole other deal. I gotta say, I will say the one thing about the halftime show that did strike me as slightly odd was the fact that there was a poll that just showed up in the middle of it. I know I understand that it's a bit of a promotional thing for J-Lo because she's one of the producers of Hustlers, and Hustlers is now available on digital download, you know, for $19.99 if you want to own it and take it home with you and never ever be without it. Watch it 14 times a day if you want to. That's just fine. That is the reason that they dropped the poll into the halftime show, right? I mean, this is just it's just Hollywood marketing. Essentially. However, I don't think this guy's alone. I think a lot of people were freaked out by this. I mean, they're sheltered. I mean, these are people that obviously don't, you know, they have broadcast only television. They don't see what else is going on. If you're watching watching the Netflix, you know, now you go on the Netflix menu. And as soon as you open it up, it just starts playing video for you. It just starts playing whatever your browser arrow is on or whatever your TV arrow is on, whatever it is, your smart TV is looking at. And there's some stuff that happens in that. And you're like, whoa. Get the kids out of the room. Mostly it's dead bodies, but that is what's going on. Now, to understand how serious this guy is, he says in his video that he wants to sue the NFL and Pepsi. All right, now he's gone too far. It's one thing to sue the NFL. That's like everybody sues the NFL. It's easy to get mad at the NFL, but it's another thing to sue Pepsi, sir. The Pepsi Corporation of America will not be sued, sir. And he'll have to hire some very fancy lawyers for that. He says he also wants to dig up a few more plaintiffs in the suit, defendants in the suit. He's the plaintiff. Yet he does not know exactly who he wants to sue. I think you got to go with J-Lo. I don't think you can sue Shakira, though, can you? I mean, the only thing she really did, she wasn't twerking and pole dancing. She made a funny noise, but other than that, which now has been explained that she was paying homage to her Middle Eastern heritage by making a traditional sound that women make in the Middle East. I think that's a worse explanation than I just wanted to do something musical. She should have just gone with that. Anyway, when you stop and you think about this, of all the things on television, other than when the poll showed up, and I thought, oh, and I was the only thing I was offended by was, like I just said, the thing when the stage turned around and there's a poll there, there's J-Lo, there's a poll, and I'm thinking, all right, oh God, now they're just promoting the movie. That's the only thing I was offended by. I mean, my God.
It's 2020, people.
Yes, people, it's everywhere. There's pole dancing classes. Suburban moms are going to pole dancing classes. Now, this guy is in Ohio. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, places in Ohio where maybe there's not a pole dancing studio near, you know, his bunker, but there might be.
Imagine this guy's Pornhub search history. Probably off the charts. Just wild searches.
I just want to say one thing to you, Kevin Power. I would like to know where your stepmom is.
This guy is a total creep, as far as I'm concerned. I know he's trying to be an anti-creep, but by being an anti-creep, he's becoming creepier.
Right, he knows he's a creep, so he doesn't want to fuel other creeps that potentially could creep on his own people, right. His own daughters.
Right, right. Well, that's the other problem, is he's afraid to drop his attractive daughters. Imagine what the daughters are thinking right now. Dad, you can't sue Pepsi! All right. Anyway, well, we wish... I hope this guy's lawsuit does go forward, though, because it would be fun to meet him. And get to and have this be the great controversy of the springtime of the year of our Lord 2020. All right, this other news. Did you see that Alexa and Amazon are in trouble because there are parents groups that are upset that they have named their child Alexa, and what is actually happening in school is merciless, because kids named Alexa are teased and ordered to do things by their fellow students because it's the name of the smart speaker.
That's hilarious.
The Business Insider talked to about a half dozen parents and adults named Alexa and discovered just how difficult their lives have become. The teen discussed the harassment that she has endured, sexual harassment she's endured, which isn't helped by headlines and product advertising that use double entendres playing on Alexa's female voice. Oh, I have turned these voices over to, I'm going with the New Zealand accent. I don't know why, but I've decided to go that way. They make me, that's probably not healthy, is it, for me? Probably not healthy for me to admit, either.
Why New Zealand?
It's just, I like it.
The sound?
Yeah.
It's calming?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. It's calming. Anyway, these kids are being teased. They are being ordered to do things. Parents are making a financial sacrifice to place their children in private schools where teasing is not allowed, because apparently in public schools it's allowed. Is it allowed in public schools?
I don't think so.
I didn't realize that. It's that a whole anywhere. Other deal? I don't know. If the taxpayers are paying for it, you got to allow teasing. One mother says she's been trying to raise awareness with a group called Alexa is a Human and has reached out to Amazon with letters and emails. But so far, those at Amazon are not reacting. They have not come to the rescue here. Maybe this is where you need to get it. This is like a good Cook County lawyer situation where the lawyer goes, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we're going to have to sue Alexa because and Amazon because of what they have done to these to my class of Alexa named girls around the world. There might be a billion of them in some variation or form. Therefore, we need $10 billion from Amazon. We'll sit down and wait for our judgment. I'm telling you, man, there will be a lawyer who will take this case because Amazon will just have to cough it up. You can change the name, though, too, right? I mean, that's the thing. That would be the defense. Can't you? The wake word, which is different than the woke word, the wake word is different. You can make it something else. Am I wrong about that? Don't all you guys jump in at once?
No, I believe you can. I always thought that was the whole thing because when it first got rolled out, this was something we all thought, like, what about people named Alexa?
Yeah. And I guess our argument is going to be we can name it Patsy if you wanted to. I don't know why I would do that, but it, just in case you want to do it. Hey, Patsy.
Patsy, how you doing?
Patsy, what's the weather outside? All right. We'll get to the news here at the bottom of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And then coming up, could it be the end of the red light cameras? We'll explain a change in that story right now. We're coming up right after the news in 2 minutes.
Greg Cotton is leaving the Tribune after 40 years of concert reviews and pop music stories. We'll talk to him after the 8:30 news. Surratt in the morning on WGN.
Bob Surratt, Radio Chicago, WGN.
Rob Cotton Show, right here, 720 WGN. Coming up on the program, a top 5 of 5 you won't believe. Mr. Richard Roper will be here to talk about the early betting favorites for the Oscars. We have a podcast up, by the way, if you'd like to listen to that, in which actually the episode that just went up is the episode where we predict all of the Oscar winners, all 24 categories. And that is coming your way we'll do that at 5:40. And then at 6 o'clock, Grammy Award winner, 30 million records sold, Richard Marx will be here to play News or Ruse. So, you're going to enjoy this. He's got a new album out. He's got a hit single out right now and a video, and there's all kinds of stuff. And, we'll tell a very intimate story about one of the people in that video coming up in the 6 o'clock hour on this radio program. Let us now talk to Jason Knowles, ABC7 consumer investigative reporter. The suburban red light cameras, is it for safety or is it just a money grab? I think I already know the answer to that.
I don't even
know why you're here to tell me that because I already know, Jason. But will there be a change?
Well, you know, I don't know if there will be a change. There's been some changes already. You know, the comptroller, Susana Mendoza, has responded to our investigations and other news that's been out there, as I'm sure we've all heard and your listeners have heard as well, with the federal investigation. There might be more changes. Susana Mendoza, the comptroller, says she will not collect anymore. She will not help these suburbs collect. They have not been doing it for the city of Chicago for quite some time since she took office, but they will no longer help the suburbs collect.
Right.
However, the suburbs can still get private collection agencies.
Oh, because they're pleasant. They're great to deal with.
And they probably will. Will more change happen? I don't know. There's a new bill that's been introduced that's passed committee to ban cameras. We'll see what happens with that. The people who are for these cameras, a lot of the police that we've talked to and the safety officials insist it is about safety. It's not about money. And they are continuously citing crash reductions at many of these intersections. And they are showing us data from IDOT where they say they can prove there is a reduction in overall crashes. On the other hand, other people argue there's more rear ends crashes because people are afraid at some of these
That's true.
Intersections.
Right. People stop abruptly as opposed to going through. And then next thing you know, you do get that. Get the pileup.
Right. The pileup. And then other people would even argue if you're really reducing these crashes and the bad behavior, then why are people still getting all these tickets? We're talking about millions and millions of dollars. And much of it we found are from right-hand turns in our previous investigations.
Right. And the vast majority from right-hand turns. The
Correct.
People are not stopping properly or they're going into a right-hand turn even though it's legal to do so. The cameras are still grabbing them up.
Yeah.
That, which is in some of these suburban, and the people don't know any better and they can't go take them to court because I always like to use this example here. When you go to the court in Chicago, now I've not gone to one of these courts, these red light camera courts in the suburbs, but in Chicago, when you walk into the court, there is actually a kangaroo in the court who is listening to your plea. It is an actual kangaroo. They get them from the zoo and they sit there, and the kangaroo looks at you blankly as a kangaroo will as you're, if you're talking to it, as you're going, don't you understand? I was turning right on a red. It's legal to turn right on a red. And the kangaroo just looks at you. And just and then you have to pay the fine.
Denied.
Everything's denied.
I have actually been in many of these hearings in the suburbs, and from what I've seen, most people do get denied. Now, a lot of people are guilty of rolling through the stop. Maybe they don't make that full 1,000 stop and let the car jerk back. But, you know, a lot of people say that there are not a lot of accidents from right on red. We've done stories on that where we've looked at the crash data, and it's like 1.2%. The last stat that we had from National Highway Transportation Safety Administration is from right on red. So
if there weren't rights on red, if there weren't rolling stops in Illinois, there'd be no stops at all. Right? I mean, the rolling stop is just, it's a standard thing. And I know it's technically illegal, but the rolling stop is, of all of the different things that can be dangerous,
that's right? The least.
It is statistically the least. Well, but it's also a moneymaker.
And it is. And the one that we're looking at tonight, the specific intersection, I can tell you it's in Rosemont. I hope everyone watches to see which.
Is this at 10?
Yeah, 10 o'clock tonight.
10 o'clock tonight.
To see which exact intersection. It's in a busy area of Rosemont. But again, it's another one of these right-hand curves. It looks like its own lane. There's an island to the left.
Uh-huh.
The light's on the island.
Uh-huh.
And then you inch up and curve around.
Is that on River Road by any chance?
Ah, ding, 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 ding.
Yes, I happen to know. I may have found myself there a few times. I can point to it right now.
I actually had a viewer, I think it was a couple days ago. She said, oh, Jason Knowles, I-Team. I said, oh, watch our red light camera story. It's going to be 10 o'clock Thursday. She goes, I got to tell you about this one in Rosemont. My son's gotten $500 in tickets at River and Higgins.
That's it. If you're approaching River and Higgins right now, stop your car.
And I said, really?
Can you stick around for just a second? I want to ask you about this on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got the police and fire chief, right,
to respond to this. We want to say their side of the story.
Donald E. Stevens Jr. or the third or
the
whatever
third.
It is. The third, right?
He says there's a 48% reduction in crashes.
Okay, well, don't give it away.
Oh, yeah, well, there's more.
Hold on. More. All right. Oh, God. Jason Knowles from ABC7 is here. We're talking about the red light camera. And it's a scam on we the consumer, is basically what it is. I know. They're like, well, this is really about public safety. You know, Rob tried to tell us that, too. And he was the greatest scofflaw of all of them. But speaking of traffic incidents, with the traffic and the weather, here's Lauren Lapka. It's the Rokon Show right here on 720 WGN. Coming up with top five at five, you won't believe, including, but not limited to, the president at a prayer breakfast coming out against prayer. I thought that was kind of interesting. Specific prayer, though, to be fair. And then we also have, in the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to tell you who's going to win the Oscars. Richard Roper is going to be here. And we're going to tell you also about movies that are coming out this weekend. And Richard Marx, the great Richard Marx, Chicago's very own. 30 million records sold, Grammy Award winner. He's written, you know the songs he sings, but he's written number one hits as well for incredible other acts. And you're like, wait, did he write that? That's unbelievable. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll play News or Roots with him, and then we'll talk about his new record that is coming out as well. All right, Jason Knowles from ABC7 is here. And Jason, you did a special tonight on the 10 o'clock news at ABC7 on the red light cameras, suburban red light cameras specifically. And in Rosemont, there is one camera that's getting a lot of action.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of action on River Road. And there's a lot of people upset about it because it's grabbing everybody. And I guess this is part of the thing. It's legal, right? But to ticket you if you're rolling to the right. But this particular intersection looks like it's inviting you to do a rolling stop
right.
to the right.
And this one, which is also a little bit different than our other ones, you know, we talked about that curve in question and the island with the light on the left, but no light on the right. Mm-hmm. And you don't see the light in the cone of vision. People think they could keep going. But there's something else there, too, which makes this even potentially more confusing. There is a sign that says that if pedestrians are present, there is no right on red. makes sense, although I would, some people would argue that there aren't a lot of pedestrians in that area.
Right.
But the sign does say if a pedestrian, if no pedestrians, you cannot, if there's no pedestrians, you can go. So if there are pedestrians, you cannot make a right on red. But what people are saying to us is they see that sign, and because it's its own lane, they think if there are no pedestrians around, that they could just keep going.
That's a trick.
So there's that almost like trick. Two.
Now, and I got to tell you,
two tricks in one potentially.
I have been a fan of Rosemont for a long time. I Rosemont to me is one of the greatest municipal inventions ever. Right? It's got 5,000 residents, and it's got so much commercial business. Right? It's got the convention center. It's hotels. Got the Allstate Arena. It's got the hotels. It's got great restaurants.
Right.
I mean, it's got that outlet mall. It's got that now that sort of festival, restaurant, Molly kind of thing that goes on with the big center. With sometimes it's an ice skating rink, sometimes it's a park. I mean, it's like, I love what, I'm a fan. I was a fan of Donald Lee Stevens, the inventor of Rosemont. I am.
He invented.
I get what he's doing. I think that I get that it's okay, but they make so much money. Did they really have to go this route? Donald E. Stevens III, who happens to be the public safety guy there, right?
Right. Like right. He talked to me. He sat down with me.
And he said this. He said this.
There is no traffic signal in my cone of vision.
Well, that's not.
Could the state be wrong?
We could all be wrong, right, Jason?
Uh-oh.
Oh, see, not Alan.
There I was him at the
when
end.
When he said it like that, we could all be wrong. Isn't that right, Jason? We could all be, you know, you could be wrong, too.
We could all be wrong, right?
Yeah.
Well, so we asked him about this. Is it a trap? He says it is not a trap. He cites the reduction in crashes. Mm-hmm. One of his biggest defenses is he's saying, well, if it was a trap, the state IDOT would not allow us to have that camera there. Now, IDOT does approve cameras, and IDOT would have a final say in many cases if a camera would be able to go up at the intersection.
Okay.
But that's based off of traffic safety and the traffic lanes and bike lanes. They don't, from what we understand talking to IDOT, they don't say, that's a trap. We don't allow that camera there because it's a trap. They don't allow
they don't,
it.
They don't determine a trap or issue. Not a trap.
Correct.
I consider anything that is law enforcement and traffic to be a trap, but that's a separate issue.
And IDOT does not place cameras anywhere.
Right. These are placed by the municipalities.
They are placed by the municipalities and the camera company. They decide where to put them, and they say they decide based off of crash data. And now this is only one camera we're talking about here. Guess how much it made? In 3 years.
And I can't even imagine. I can't do that kind of math. Please.
One camera made about $2.5 million. We should say was ticketed to $2.5 million because we don't know if the city actually collected all that money. They'll eventually get it.
What the red light camera company gets out of that too. They get
correct.
They have to get their beak wet, as they like to say in all the court filings, because the red light camera companies have a very checkered legal history. You have one red light camera CEO who has gone to jail in two separate states, in Illinois and in Ohio, for malfeasance. And the funny thing is that why the red light camera itself, I understand it as a law enforcement tool. And I happen to be in favor of cameras. I like cameras. I think that they in the long run do make things safer. The red light camera does seem to be a little bit of a trick because, especially in Chicago, as it was being applied, they were shortening up the yellow lights so they could catch you on the red light. The red light cameras do, as you're pointing out, this one intersection in Rosemont does. It's almost a little bit like a story problem when you're trying to figure it out, right? Because
right.
It says if there's people present, you can't turn right on red. So you assume you can't turn right on red if they're not pedestrians present. So does that mean you have to stop? You didn't realize you had to stop?
Or can you go? And then there's the curve. I mean, how yes, are you processing all of this in 10 right. seconds as you approach?
Yes, and that, I think, is a little bit of and that's just a revenue grab for a lot of these municipalities. And as I pointed out, it's, you know, Rosemont, you're doing good. I mean, I don't know that you need this on top, but, you know, whatever. There are all kinds of questions being asked about why are they getting these red light cameras, and who's getting paid? As we will find out in court in the next 6 weeks, that there are going to be a number of politicians that are going to be affected by at least one suburban municipal leader who was on the take to put the red light cameras in his particular area.
Right.
By the company, because the company was doing the payoffs.
Well, and because of that investigation, I think a lot of people are just very skeptical. And let's say, even if you are for red light cameras, let's say there is an argument.
You know who's for the red light
them.
Cameras? The inventor of the red light
well,
camera.
Yeah, well, because the companies make money. But let's say that you do buy into this safety argument, and there is a little bit of an argument and a side to that safety angle. Why? And this was my question to the superintendent. Why not make it crystal clear at these intersections? Let's say keep the red light camera. Why is it not crystal clear with additional signage that says you have to stop here no matter what? Or a light on the right showing in people's cone of vision so they can see the traffic light on the right. So then there's no question. And I wonder how much money they'd make if that was there and if that was implemented. I mean, do you think it would make $2.5 million?
Who's to say? Who's to say? Why are you asking questions like that? You're just a troublemaker. Jason Knowles, ABC 7. Tonight, 10 o'clock, you're going to make trouble. And all these people are going to be calling my office and asking questions about what I do. I don't need it. That's the way this ball bounces in this part of the world.
But the superintendent said it's not about money. It's about safety. And mm-hmm. he said he wouldn't care if it made less money. And
okay, well, then let's find tonight. Out.
So
okay, well, that'd be good.
If they make changes.
So we should make that change. I'm all for them. I'm a fan. They do a nice job.
It's a fun town.
It is a fun town.
They have all the cool restaurants.
Yes,
like Chicago.
They got a casino near there. They didn't exactly get the casino there, but that's another story for another time. But they got a casino. I mean, it's Chicago's dirty little mind up there, right? Because you got it to the south. You've got a community that's got a lot of interesting adult-related businesses that is not Rosemont, but it's, you know, right down the street. And then to the north, you got the casino, and then you got the hotels and the restaurants and all the stuff. It's Vegas. It's like a strip. And I get it. I get what they did. I don't begrudge them a thing.
Yeah, they should be successful.
Yes, they should be successful. I just want them to be successful and fair because it's, you know, there's no reason. You're doing great. There's no reason to now nickel and dime people on a red light camera that you know might be a little bit of a cheater. Yeah, I mean, you got to know it. You got to know it based on how you just described it.
Do you think these red light cameras will survive another
no,
few years?
I do not. I think it's going to be become such a political bugaboo. And the fact that we've got all of these other people from the red light camera industry and the politicians all going to the pokey as a result of these businesses, it may just because it's a dangerous business to be involved in. Because it does appear to be the pattern and practice of these companies to be trying to lure and induce politicians to go with it by using cash inducements. That appears to be the case in many of these, and I think that alone probably is going to do it. And the feds are going to just, it's like, you know, shooting fish in a barrel, which is exactly how the feds look at Cook County. Jason Knowles, we'll see you at ABC 7 tonight, 10 o'clock.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. No, thank you for having us.
Chicago's very own WGN Radio Chicago.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Yes, it's the Rokan Show, top five at five, five most newsworthy, important, funny, weird sound bites of the last 24 hours. That's generally how we like to look at this. All right, here we go. Checking in at
number five.
Well, the president today unleashed his fury against those who had tried to impeach him at a prayer breakfast first, and then there was an event at the White House. We'll get to that in a second. But at a prayer breakfast. Now, remember, this is a prayer breakfast, a National Day of Prayer. And, of course, it was a bit of a whiplashy kind of message because he's contrasting the speakers who had come up before him, and that many of them are men and women of the cloth, including keynote speaker and Harvard professor Arthur Brooks, who had described a crisis of contempt and polarization in the nation, urged those in attendance to gather and love your enemies. Right? That comes right from Christ. That's the point of that. But then, but the president was like, you know what? That's for another day. What about Mitt Romney?
I don't
like people who use their faith as justification for doing what they know is wrong.
I wouldn't necessarily think watching Mitt Romney yesterday that he thought it was wrong. But he did use his faith to come up with the argument for why Mitt Romney used his idea of faith as a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to be the guy that said, listen, based on my covenant with God, I believe that this is what the president did, and I think it was wrong, and so I'm going to vote to convict on one count, one of the two counts, not both counts. And he did it, and he'll probably not be heard from again. And then he talked about Nancy Pelosi.
Nor do I like people who say, I pray for you, when they know that that's not so. So many people have been hurt, and we can't let that go on.
This was the prayer breakfast. About an hour and a half later, he was at the White House. And at the White House, in front of a group of his supporters, his lawyers from the impeachment trial, other members of the cabinet, and members of the House and the Senate who had been particularly helpful to him during the process, or they had taken his side during the process, and he called them all out and he thanked them for what they were for all the things that that they had done. And he was a little, it was interesting because he, in the morning, he had a little bit more of an angry tone, I thought, at the prayer breakfast. And then it was a little lighter because he came out to hail to the chief. There was a lot of pomp and circumstance to the White House event today. And I think he was emboldened by that and bolstered by that. So I think his mood was a little lighter. But at the end of the day, the one thing that is happening here is that, however you put it, it's a victory lap because the president did win. He was holding up the newspapers in which he said, the president acquitted or Trump acquitted on the Washington Post. And then there was another just acquitted headline that he held up. He liked to show that off. And I think that the president believes that this is going to be a big help for him in the election. And this is going to be a point. He's going to use this as a talking point to keep moving forward about, see, this is all fake. It was all fake news. It was a hoax. Now, unfortunately, there are going to be some other things that are going to happen along the way, I think, that are going to go the other way for him, which is the Bolton book is going to come out. There are going to be some other people that are going to come out. Remember, there was the anonymous guy or woman who wrote the book. That person's going to reveal themselves before the election. There are some other pieces here. People who are going to have other stories from being inside the Trump White House, and we'll just have to see how that all goes. But at this moment, this is a particularly good week for Donald Trump. You had the complete cluster F in Iowa for the Democratic caucus, which makes Democrats look confused. And it also leads to I think Bernie Sanders is completely unelectable. Donald Trump will, right now, the numbers show that Donald Trump would beat Bernie Sanders going away. Pete Buttigieg is an untested character, so I'm not quite sure what's going to happen there. But the good news for the president is that Joe Biden slipped down to fourth, did not do particularly well. And if he doesn't do well in New Hampshire next week, probably not good for him. So the president of the United States is having a great week. It is 1 week in February, with the election still to come in November. That's many, many months away. A lot of things can happen. But at this point, it's game and set in the first set here to Donald Trump. Now, there's a little change in tone from when Bill Clinton addressed the nation after his acquittal.
I want to say again to the American people how profoundly sorry I am for what I said and did to trigger these events and the great burden they have imposed on the Congress and on the American people. This can be, and this must be, a time of reconciliation and renewal for America.
Loser. I think that's just the way you have to look at it. I did get an email today from the Trump campaign that said, sorry, haters, I'm not going anywhere, and said that and went on to say, I have been a perfect president. So there you have it. Victory lap right there. Okay. We'll get to your 4, 3, 2, and 1. But first, here is Lauren Lapka. She's got the traffic and the weather.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN TV.
Top 5-5 continues. We're up to
number 4.
Tax on CTA trains and buses keep making headlines. WGN-TV's Lourdes Duarte obtained data from the CTA, which shows the number of reported bus system assaults were 73. There were 73 in 2018, up from 62 the previous year. But as of mid-July in 2019, there were 47. This is, so it's growing every year by about 20%. Keith Hill runs the Chicago Transit Union, and he says that more needs to be done for not only his employees, but of course, the traveling public.
We got spitting incidents, fair disputes, school kids that fight, simple assaults. We have a silent alarm we can push. We've been complaining for about 2 or 3 years to check, to have CTA check them to make sure it works.
They don't work?
We think quite a bit of them don't work. We think over 70% of the fleet is probably not functioning correctly. It would be nice and ideal to have an officer on each bus, but that's not realistic. Actually, one of the things that the union is thinking about is going back to security, being our own security detail. You know, we have a concern about the passengers and the drivers. And we've had a couple shootings on a bus where the operators had to jump out the window.
The buses do have the silent alarm, theoretically, where they can just press a button and then police will surround the bus without anybody realizing what's going on. That's theoretically how that system is supposed to work. And of course, also, the silent alarms on the trains. Now, the trains, however, the first and most important thing they should do on the trains, obviously, you need increased patrols on the platforms themselves. And again, that just requires more police officers. And I'm sick and tired of listening to the city of Chicago keep telling us and whoever the superintendent is at the time tell us, well, we don't really need more police. We just need, you know, we need to just have a better scheme for using the police. That is not true. We need more police. That is just the bottom line. And I know it's an expensive proposition, but it is a necessary proposition because Chicago cannot withstand this reputation that we are getting. We cannot continue to move forward and progress as an economic institution unless we do eventually tackle this. And the CTA problem is getting worse. It is not getting better. And what they need to do, and this is important, is they need to replace. The CTA needs to add the conductors back to the trains. You got the motorman who's up in the front, but they used to have conductors who were in the train itself, and they would move between the cars, and they're the people that would look out the windows and make sure the doors were opening and all that. And I know that's all electronic now, theoretically, but it was a safety measure because those guys have radios, and they're capable of making they don't have to make the announcements anymore. There's some dissonant voice that does that, but they can be a presence, an official presence. And I just think that that's absolutely, absolutely necessary. I know you're saying, well, you're not paying for it. Well, we're all paying for it in the long run. So if I just spent a few minutes with the mayor, this would all work out better for us. So speaking of the police, so here is at a press conference earlier to announce the arrest of a suspect who shot someone on the Blue Line train stop in the South Loop, UIC. Chicago Police Interim Superintendent Charlie Beck says he's working with the CTA to try to beef up security.
Every crime is important, obviously, but when you attack a system that almost half of the people of Chicago use every day, then that's something that affects everybody. And as a matter of fact, I'm meeting with CTA tomorrow to discuss police deployment in the transit system, and we're going to look at increasing our efforts there. I think it's really important that people feel safe on public transportation and that public transportation is able to function effectively.
And they do have one of the best networks of security systems, the cameras and all the rest of that at the CTA, than you have in almost any other institution in Chicago. They're great. You can see it like on the news. When something goes wrong, they will show you a still photograph of the perpetrator who might be on the loose, and they're amazingly defined pictures, right? They've got really good systems. It's just about having enough people to help make that work, whether it's Chicago police personnel or their own security personnel or their own employees along the way. All right. Checking in at, don't tell me,
number 3.
Thank you. You told me. Notorious Ponzi schemer Bernard Madoff is asking to get out of the pokey. You might recall he got a 150-year sentence for stealing billions of dollars from people, ruining lives, creating an economic catastrophe amongst his investors. Now, he says he's got end-stage kidney disease and other chronic serious medical conditions. His doctors have told him he has 18 months to live. First of all, no doctor tells you how many months to live you have. No doctor tells you that anymore. That's only in movies when they go, "Doc, give it to me straight. How much time do I got?" "Oh, well, you've got 6 weeks to live." They never say that. And if they were to say it, they'd say, "Get your affairs in order," because they mean you're going to die within 2 weeks. That's the only thing they know. They never say it's about 18 months. Could be 2 years. We're not quite sure. You might be able to, you get it like 18 months. You can do 6 months going around the world. You got this, you got that. I mean, come on. So, no less a public figure than Zsa Zsa Gabor's widower, and Zsa Zsa Gabor was one of the people taken by Bernie Madoff. You might remember her. She was famous for being famous. She was like the original Kardashian. Her widower, who's Austrian-American businessman Frederick Prince von Anhalt, who's been calling himself a prince even though he's not for years. Also another guy, he used to walk around in a Porsche jacket, Porsche hat, Porsche pants, and Porsche shoes. He ran into the cameras of TMZ. They somehow found him to comment on Bernie Madoff, and it's just as you'd expect.
If he has another 18 months to live, that's a little too long, you know. I mean, if we should let him in another 16 months and then let him out the last 2 months, that would be okay. I could live with that. And furthermore, if he has kidney failure, I'm sure he has lots of accounts people don't even know yet about it, you know. He has so much money outside. So, yeah, they should let him out to get all the rest of the money and then he can buy himself some new kidneys, you know. There's lots of things you can do with your health. You can buy a new heart. You can buy no lung, so he can do that. But just to let him out, you know, 18 months, that's a little too bad.
Thank God Prince Frederick von Anhalt speaks the truth. Let them out so he can buy his own lungs. Shut up. All right, moving along. Two.
Number two.
Gail King has responded to backlash over her asking about Kobe Bryant's rape case in an interview with the WNBA star Lisa Leslie. Now, this all came to light here because of a short clip on the CBS Morning News interview that was posted on social media. And King asked Leslie if she thinks that Bryant's legacy is complicated by the sexual assault charge.
It's been said that his legacy is complicated because of a sexual assault charge, which was dismissed in 2003, 2004. Is it complicated for you as a woman, as a WNBA player? Is it even a fair question to talk about it, considering he's no longer with us and that it was resolved? Or is it really part of his history?
I think that the media should be more respectful at this time. It's like if you had questions about it, you've had many years to ask him that.
So Gail King then had to go on Instagram and explain that she didn't realize that that clip was going to make it out onto the social media.
I know that if I had only seen the clip that you saw, I'd be extremely angry with me too. I am mortified, I'm embarrassed, and I am very angry. Unbeknownst to me, my network put up a clip from a very wide-ranging interview. Totally taken out of context, and when you see it that way, it's very jarring. It's jarring to me. I didn't even know anything about it. I started getting calls. What the hell are you doing? I did not know what people are talking about. So I've been told, or I've been advised, to say nothing. Just let it go. People will drag you. People will troll you. It'll be over in a couple of days. But that's not good enough for me.
Well, it's going to have to be good enough for you. because that's the way it's going to go. It's not an unfair question to ask. I mean, people are asking it, but it is. But I think Lisa Leslie's answer to that is actually appropriate, which is there have been many intervening years here, and the Kobe Bryant's behavior in the aftermath, and his devotion to his family, and his devotion to his wife, and his devotion to the community, and all the other things that he's turned himself toward, certainly does change the image of what happened there. And again, this was a case that could not go to criminal trial. It ended up being settled civilly. And there are certainly a lot of questions about it. It was not a cut and dried case of a sexual assault. So I just, you know what? If we can't even get along, we can't even figure that out right now, let alone the bigger issues. And finally, checking in at
number one.
Kelly Kay does not appear to have any regrets about charging the field during the Super Bowl. She tried to go streaking in a bikini, but was tackled by a red jacket clad security person during the first half of the game. She's a 27-year-old social media influencer.
Of course she is.
That makes her very famous, by the way, in case you're wondering. And she wanted to have an Instagram moment. That's what she said. So she spoke to TMZ and says she doesn't understand why this was taken so seriously.
Another thing that was just like I didn't expect and didn't think about was the FBI and Homeland Security was interrogating me. And it's like six guys from the FBI. And I'm like, is this even real? Like, you hear about the FBI, but you never think that the FBI is going to be like interrogating you. And they're just grilling me with questions. And they're like, if you cooperate, maybe you won't go to jail. And because at first I wasn't talking to them at all. And they got so mad because I like wouldn't speak. And they threw me in the holding cell with four other girls. So, yeah.
Becca and Amber.
Okay. Kylie.
Oh, God. We'll play more of her a little later on. I got to go. I got to close this thing up. There's just too much happening in my head.
The top five at five.
It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. Mr. Richard Roper, brought to you by Architect of Chicagoland, has stepped into the studio. I want to build an outdoor movie theater. I want to have them do that for me next. That's the thing they can do. I don't know why we're...
I'd be in for that.
Yes, I think that's... I don't know why we're even not doing that right now. Why don't we have shovels in the ground.
And then we can team up with Justin Kaufman and we'll do a bracket, the best movies to watch at the outdoor theater. Because there's a difference. There's different movies that work better outside.
Thank you. That's right, Richard Roper. Coming up on the program, our friend Mr. Richard Marks is here.
What?
And he is going to be celebrating his new album that has just come out. And he's
Limitless, I believe.
Yes, and the first single has made the top 20. Amazing. For adult contemporary. Congratulations
Too
to
great.
Him. This will be his fourth decade of cracking the top 20. And when you stop and you think about it, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and today, or 20s, you know, whatever it is.
80s, 90s.
Yeah, it's a fifth decade. Oh, my gosh.
Ooh, that's pretty
boy.
Cool.
Oh, God.
And he's still a youngster, so he's got like three more decades in him.
Right. He was 16 or something when the whole thing started. Sort of like that. So he'll be joining us. He'll be playing News or Ruse. That will be something. And as I pointed out earlier, he's a guy that doesn't like, you know, he and Lauren Lapka are the same in a lot of ways. They don't like to be wrong. And
I'm also super talented at writing songs.
Yes, right. Yeah, that's sure you are. So I would like the two of them, you know, they're both competitive types. And they're like, no, I'm not wrong about that. And then and that's going to be fun. To watch this go right here, these two.
Lauren had her own hit with In the Gallows last year.
That's
from
true.
Game of Thrones. So.
True. That is absolutely true. All right. Let us now check in with Mr. Roper about films that are coming out this weekend, and then we'll get to the big Oscar picks.
Okay, great. You know, this is really interesting to me because this is not a reboot of a character, but it's a rebirth, if you will. There's a movie coming out called, are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. That is the full title of the movie. That is why 17% of all theater workers have quit, because they're not going to get that on the marquee. But it's basically Birds of Prey. Now, people might remember Harley Quinn, Margot Robbie played her in Suicide Squad. That was a big, highly anticipated DC Universe movie from 3 years ago, and it was a disaster. It was a bomb. It was a stinker. No one liked it. People didn't want to see it. They just missed it on every level, including her character. Part of the problem is the Suicide Squad is a band of kind of, you know, anti-heroes, and they PG-13 the thing to death. So they played it super safe. Now we've got Harley Quinn's standalone story, which takes place after Suicide Squad, but it's rated R. And it's all about her. And the Birds of Prey are fellow female anti-heroes, including a cop played by Rosie Perez, who everybody knows talks exactly like she's in a 1980s cop series all the time.
Right.
Actually has to turn in her gun and badge at one point. Everyone goes, ooh, this is when the good stuff happens, after the cop turns in the gun and the badge. So very self-referential. Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays Huntress. She's got a crossbow. And everyone keeps saying it's a bow and arrow. She's like, I'm not 12. It's a crossbow. So there's a lot of dark humor in there, a lot of violence. It's got a little bit of that Guy Ritchie. We talked about a film called The Gentleman from a couple of weeks ago. And you're going to get the songs like Barracuda by Heart and Hit Me With Your Best Shot from Pat Benatar. You know, hipster, like, chick power, female empowerment songs. Mm-hmm. Here's a little clip where the Birds of Prey, who have been kind of at odds with one another, now realize that the bad guys all want to kill them, so they better band together.
He's not just after the kid anymore. He's after all of us. Sure as hell after me. I just robbed him. You just betrayed him. You just killed his BFF. And you're dumb enough to be building a case against him. So, unless we all want to die very unpleasant deaths and let Roma go finger fishing in the kid's intestinal tract, we're going to have to work together.
Okay.
Now, we called this movie... In our podcast, in the Best Movies podcast, which you go to the Sun-Times website or wherever fine podcasts are found, we said this is one of the 20 movies to look out for in the year 2020.
And I'm happy to report, Rokan, 3.5 stars for Birds of Prey. Another contributing factor, I think, here, in addition to the R rating and the better visual looks and the special effects, it's directed by Kathy Yan, written by Christina Hudson. And sometimes women write for women better than men do. You might notice that every once in a while. Actually, there's a theme. All the movies we're talking about today are directed by women and or written by women. But it's very dark. It's very funny. And there's a lot of inside jokes for people who know the comic book series.
All right. It's got the longest title in the history of titles. But Harley Quinn. Just look for Harley Quinn.
Look for Birds of Prey.
Birds of Prey.
Birds of Prey.
Okay.
Birds E-Y. Of
Prey. All right. Okay. We're going to come back and talk about a movie that, it's quite a look at the Harvey Weinstein world. And if Harvey Weinstein were a shark, this would be the perfect movie for you. Yeah. And then we'll talk about what the big Oscar. You think there is maybe an Oscar upset in the making here. We're going to talk about that. But first, let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the traffic and the weather? Mr. Richard Roper is here. We're reviewing movies. We're going to talk about the Oscars here in just a moment. And then Richard Marx is here. He's going to be joining us to play News or Ruse and do other sorted and sundry things.
That's amazing.
Yes. 30 million records sold.
I was going to say, between us, we have 30 million records sold, RM and I.
That's true.
Congratulations.
The three of us have spent a lot of time together over the years, and when I say to friends, I go, well, Richard is doing this, they always go, which one? It's the way it goes. I got this podcast with Richard. Which one? Well, Richard Roper and I have a podcast.
It's been confusing at dinner a couple of times, too, because someone's saying, Richard, pay attention, and I don't know which one of us is wandering off.
That's true. All right, let's talk about The Assistant before we talk about the Oscars. This is a movie that's coming out now. It's a look at what happened at Miramax, really.
Yeah, but it's a fictional film. A really interesting take from a writer-director named Kitty Greenrow, and what she did was she tells the story. It's clearly based on Harvey Weinstein. I mean, everything about it is, but it's fictional. Julia Garner, and if people watch Ozark, which is a Netflix series, she's Ruth on that. She won an Emmy for it. She's a wonderful actress. So she plays a recent graduate of Northwestern, honors graduate, 5 weeks into this new job, a coveted job, but it's a low rung on the ladder, as you'll get it. And it's at the offices in New York City, in Manhattan, of a prestigious award-winning boutique film studio, clearly based on Miramax. And she gets a job as an assistant. She's almost like an assistant to the assistant, but just on the other side of the door is the mogul, who is never named, never seen. Everybody talks about him. Everybody reacts to him. His wife calls the assistant, yelling at her, wondering where her husband is. And we see all these little details. It's one day in the life of the assistant. We see her going into the office and cleaning crumbs off the desk. We see her scrubbing a stain out of the sofa. We see her doing other things that assistants don't usually or should normally have to do, and also doing things like printing out scripts, et cetera, et cetera. We see how everybody else reacts around him. We also see things like a young waitress from Idaho who met the mogul at a conference has just flown in and is being put up at a posh hotel because he's offered her a job. So our title character, the assistant, after a day of this and 5 weeks of this, she decides she's going to drop in on human resources and kind of outline all these disturbing things. So here's a moment where the HR guy kind of reacts not the way you'd hope that he would to her complaints.
What's your plan?
Sorry?
Where do you want to be in 5 to 10 years?
Oh, I want to produce. I want to be a producer.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, that's excellent. We could use more women producers. You know, it's a tough job, but I can see that you've got what it takes. So why are you in here trying to throw it all away over this bull?
That's Matthew McFadden, who's on the show Succession. You might recognize his voice. He's the guy that's married to the one daughter. And he just does a number on her where he acts like he's very concerned and basically lets her know more than once during that meeting, go back to your office and shut up. If not, you're going to lose your job. And he even gives her the classic, there are 500 other girls who would take that job. So I'm giving 3 stars to the assistant. It moves at a very deliberate pace, but it really is film roll like a monster movie where you never see the monster.
Like
the way people react to it. Yeah. Or a lot of great ghost movies. Or you even look at it, you know, films about like Quiet Place from a couple of years ago, or Signs, where we only caught a glimpse of the aliens at the end of the movie, and that's almost always a little bit underwhelming because it's all about the sights and the sounds. Here, the monster is a mogul who's verbally abusive, who's taking advantage of the women who come into his office, who just manipulates everybody to his gain, and everyone's afraid to deal with him, including the mid-level executives who all come, you know, running to him at all times. It's a fascinating and chilling look at this horrible, horrible story from the point of view of one young woman who all she wants to do is get her foot in the door and work her way up the showbiz ladder the legitimate way.
As if there were one. May I ask you where you find this? Is this theaters?
It's theaters, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very early on, but it's the type of film that Julia Garner could get nomination consideration because the film is just always centered on her, and it's very low key. You don't see her flying into hysterics. You see this young woman who came to New York with all the great hopes of the world, all the details where she shows up early and she has to wash everybody's coffee cups and certain demeaning things that unfortunately are a part of the, you know, the low rung jobs. But then you see it go into spiraling into other stuff, including the arrival of certain needles that are used to inject a certain part of the body, which has been mentioned in a certain trial.
Yeah, just ripped from the headlines.
Yes.
All right. Speaking of the headlines, let's talk about the Oscars very quickly here. And if you'd like to hear all of Richard's Oscar picks, you can go again to the podcast, The Best Movies, The Race for the Gold, which is now available where all podcasts are found. You can go to the Sun-Times website, or you can just on your podcast, wherever you get your podcast, just type in Richard Rober and Rokon or either of our names, and it'll pop up for you.
Ask Jeeves, if nothing else.
They heard you on the Dan Patrick show today plugging this. We really appreciate that. And so we've got all the Oscar stuff. You got Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actors and Actresses, and the Oscar picks. That's a separate episode in and of itself.
We also, I have to say, Rokon, we finally give people the answer they've been asking me for 20 years. What is the difference between sound mixing and sound editing? And I know Richard Marx is going, are you kidding me, you idiots? But I'm talking about specifically for motion pictures.
All right, so.
Yes.
You think that there may be a couple of films that may be streaking here at the end.
Yeah, first of all, you know, Parasite is now the favorite for Best Picture after being considered maybe 12-1 when the nominees were first announced, because we all said, oh, it'll win for foreign language film, which they now call international film. Mm-hmm. So 1917 or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood will win. Right now, Parasite is now the favorite. So that's a lot of movement. And then, big movement, not since Blue Star Airlines in the original Wall Street all of a sudden became a hot stock. About a week ago, Toy Story 4 was like 1 to 50 to win Best Animated Film, right? So you put down a dollar, I mean, you put down $50 just to win one. It was that big of a favorite. Now it is the co-favorite with a film called Klaus, which was a Netflix original. It's a very interesting, very different style of animation than Pixar, and it's getting all this momentum. It won the BAFTA for Best Animated Film.
That's the British Oscar.
And then there's an animated film award category called the Annies, which is a big deal in the animated community because they give out awards in different aspects, not just the film itself. Hmm. And it was the big winner at the Annies. So now all of a sudden, and as we've talked about, you can actually bet on the Oscars in certain states, New Jersey, Indiana, and, of course, different online things. Mm-hmm. So there's money moving on Klaus.
Wow.
Now, if Klaus wins, not since the Iowa caucuses are we going to have, you know, there's going to be a demand for a recount. It's going to be Moonlight and La La Land, except for its cartoon characters. It's going to be Sit Down, Woody and Buzz. Klaus, you guys won.
Wow.
So that wow, that's I've never seen that much movement in any category this late.
I would say that Parasite does not have a chance, and I'll tell you why. Because I am certain that Kirk Douglas in his dying act did not vote for it for Best Picture.
Too soon.
It is too soon, but I love Kirk Douglas. We'll talk about him tomorrow. But I just think that there's the Academy is still pretty provincial about things. Yes. And I think I think a foreign language film, an international film that is in Korean, there's a little bit of English in it, but not a lot. It is in maybe two or three lines. I just don't think that all the people who are voting will have seen it.
I will just add this in just a couple of seconds. Kirk Douglas is the only person ever who could have voted for all four versions of A Star is Born, plus Renee Zellweger as Judy Garland.
There you go. Richard Roper. He'll be back with us tomorrow. We'll be talking more about the Oscars then and also all of the other things that are happening. Richard Marks, the other Richard, is going to be joining us right here. We're gonna listen to a little bit of the music that he's put out, and he's going to play News or Ruse.
It's time to get briefed on the day ahead, know what's going on, what happened last night, what's going to happen today, in a way that puts facts and information up front. We all have different opinions, but I think the facts are important, and then you decide what you think about it. Hi, it's Bob Surratt. Tomorrow morning, WGN.
Richard Marks is in the studio with us. This is his new single, one of many that is going to be coming out from his new album, Limitless, which drops tomorrow.
Went to a man's, but the place was gone. No tables open at the other restaurant. Drove to the movie, it was all sold out. So I said, baby, where to now? Line at the bar was just too damn long. That DJ wouldn't even play our song.
Here comes the hook. I'm going to talk over it.
Don't talk over the hook.
I'm going to talk. Now I'm going to talk over the hook. I'm going to talk up to the hook.
Run away with me.
There we go.
And the moon is high. And the salt on your skin tastes sweet. And the fire lights. Got nothing on you and me. Look around. It's all we could ever need. It's going down. We got a front row seat.
No relation, front row seat. When you were writing this song, along with the great Matt Scannell,
yep,
who was on this show over the summer, yeah, at this band Vertical Horizon.
Yep.
We were talking about it, and I thought you should spell Roe, R-O-E, on the for the album, and you refused to do it.
Damn.
Yes.
Yeah, well,
congratulations on this.
Thank you.
This album, Limitless, is amazing.
Thanks, brother.
I got to hear it right when you were finishing it in the summer. And it is, there are four hits on the absolutely gigantic hits. And you already have one.
Well,
right?
We had one. We had a pretty good run with the first single, which was Another One Down, mm-hmm, which I wrote with this young punk named Lucas Marks, who happens to be my middle spawn.
Mm-hmm. He prefers that as opposed to son. Yeah.
Yeah.
And all three of your sons are in the music business now, right?
Yeah.
All working writers and producers and performers.
Yeah.
And there is
not one doctor.
Not yes, that's true. There was. I think that at one point, I think that Lucas wanted to be a dentist, though. But I think that was only because of the claymation.
I would have actually probably preferred that.
Yes, that's fine. So there is a this, but it's an amazing song. And it hit top 20, right?
Top 15.
Top 15 on the Adult Contemporary charts.
Yes. An old guy like me, right next to Maroon 5 and Adele, and it was awesome.
Now, let me just ask you this question. Did you have a top 15 or top 10 in the 80s?
Yeah.
In the 80s, right? Sure. In 1988 or 89. Right.
87, 88, 89.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, right. In the 1990s, you did.
Yeah, for sure.
In the 2000s, you did.
Yep.
And now in the 2010s, you did.
Yes.
And now in the 2020s, you did. That gives you, and
hold
on a second. 5 decades you have been in the top 20.
Wow.
5 decades.
That's crazy.
Now, how old are you?
34.
That's a crazy thing, Richard Marx, when you stop and you
think
about it.
Well, you know, I mean, somebody mentioned that. My manager mentioned that to me recently, and I kind of had to do the mental math on it. I was like, wait a minute, but I'm 56, so how? Oh, right.
Okay, yeah, how did that happen?
Yeah, my first charted song was a song I wrote with Kenny Rogers in 1983, so I was not even 20. I was 19. And it was called Crazy. And then there was another one on that same album that I wrote with Kenny Rogers called What About Me, that was a trio of Kenny Rogers, Kim Carnes, and the late, great James Ingram.
Wow.
And that went to number one on the adult contemporary chart. Crazy went to number one on the country charts. So I was off to a great start at 19 as a songwriter. And
you actually had number ones that either that you wrote and performed, or you wrote,
yeah,
right,
both.
In all of these decades,
both,
too.
Yes.
Not in the 2020s yet. We'll get this one to number one before it's all said.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Wow.
I've got 10 years.
That's true. I didn't really think about that. That's true.
I've got the pressure's off.
Yes,
I've got
9
years.
You're a slacker, though, Richard Marx. That's the one thing we know about you. All right, we're going to play News or Ruse.
Okay.
All right. Now, the idea here, if you want to play News or Ruse, and maybe you'll be lucky enough to either land with Richard or Lauren Lapka, who will scratch each other's eyes out here because they're both very competitive. 312-981-7200.
I haven't even met her. I wouldn't scratch.
No. You never know. Oh, my God. You might. You might. Yeah. She can really get, you know. Just wait.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Yes, okay. All right, we'll find out. So if you want to play News or Ruse, 312-981-7200. We're playing for some really cool stuff. And Richard Marx is here. And then on the other side of News or Ruse, we'll talk more about the new record.
About
and
me and my thing and what I'm into.
we're going to go through it. We're actually going to go through song by song. And I'm going to ask you, what was it that you were thinking at the time?
I was thinking about me.
That you wrote this
I'm always
song.
Thinking about me.
Yeah, but it would be kind of interesting to find those things out. I do have to say, we did, before I get too far away from this, because this new record, we were in California in the summer in August, and we were driving around with your beautiful wife, Daisy Fuentes,
yes,
in her new car, and the top down, and even though it's a hard top car, I had no idea how they did this. It's like the Jetsons car, and we're driving up and down in Hollywood,
yep,
blasting this record out of the car.
And I remember that front row seat was your favorite. I think that was your favorite,
yes,
wasn't it?
For sure. Well, because I thought it was about me. And that turned out to be wrong. But that, I love the production on that record and all of the stuff that is on this album. It's vintage you and new all at the same time.
Oh, thank you.
So that's a really cool thing.
Even from a pal.
Yeah. Well, I would tell you if it was crap, because I told you when
there's
been crap.
You would tell me privately and maybe even publicly.
I think I've done it both ways. All right, back to News or Ruse with Richard Marx. But first, let's check in with the traffic and the weather. Here's Lauren Lapka.
And now, the Rokan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Rokan.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. We are playing News or Ruse. We actually have a real celebrity. We like to say we have celebrities, and sometimes we just ask the lady who cleans up in here, who, by the way, is our own personal celebrity because we couldn't go without her. But we actually have a real one in the studio with us right now, Mr. Richard Marx. More than 30 million records sold. He's got a Grammy, and he's got a new album out called Limitless, which drops tomorrow, but there are already singles out and videos and all the rest. And there are moments in this we'll talk about a little bit later on that are very near and dear to my heart, and there's a reason I want to talk about it. I might cry.
Oh, I think I know where that's going.
Okay. Now, here's what everybody's playing for. The winner gets a $75 certificate from Green Tea Home Services for all your home service needs, including garage door maintenance, air duct purification, carpet cleaning. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA or go to greenteaservices.com, and everybody gets pair of tickets to see Sheer Madness, the hilarious murder mystery whodunit, brings audiences into the action to catch the killer among the actors so the outcome is never the same. Playing at the Mercury Theater, Chicago, February 7th through March 29th. Get tickets at mercurytheater.com or 773-325-1700. All right, let's meet our contestants. Paul is playing with Lauren. Paul, are you there?
I am here.
All right, Chris is playing with Kevin Powell.
I am here.
All right, Chris. Kevin, are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
I didn't think so. And Tony is playing with Richard Marks.
Present.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, now. Hi, Rich. How are you?
I'm good, man.
All right.
Yeah, let's get him. Let's get him.
Yeah, let's get him.
I know.
All right.
Let's beat the crap out of these people.
I think already we have a winner. I don't even know why we need to play. I like his attitude completely. All right, here we go. Here's your first headline. Is this news or did we make it up? Is it a ruse? Here we go. Paul and Lauren, here's your headline. Miami strippers file lawsuit against NFL alleging Super Bowl officials failed to tip appropriately.
Lauren, that being true.
I think that's news.
All right, let's go news.
You saw me shaking my head, right?
Yeah. See, this is what I'm talking about. See, this is the competitive thing.
I got that one right.
I didn't have to do that, and I got that one right. You see what's going to go
that
on
That wasn't
here?
Even mine, and I got it right.
Wait till she does this back to you. Would you just wait? Here's what's going to happen. All right, Chris and Kevin, here is your headline. Ukrainian textbook uses Keanu Reeves meme instead of historical photo.
Oh, my gut reaction is news.
I'll go with news.
That is news. I have no idea how that's news. Wait,
and it was the Keanu picture from Bill and Ted.
The Matrix.
It is
not the Matrix.
It is unbelievable. That is so funny. All right. Well, this just tells you why the Ukrainian thing was not a hoax. All right. Checking in. Let's see. Now, here you go. Let's see, Richard, if you can actually get this.
Let's see if I can convert.
Yeah, you need to convert because you're telling me, oh, no, I'm getting all these right. Here we go. Package labeled bag full of drugs leads to Florida arrests.
I'm going to go true. I'm going to go news.
Let's go.
There we go.
Boom.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, sure. Give him the easy one.
Yeah. Now,
wow. Lauren's already turned on me.
Yep. Here we go. Round two. All right, Paul and Lauren, this is your chance to get back in this. City council apologizes to dead woman told to fix her own headstone. City council apologizes to dead woman told to fix her own headstone.
I think I might have heard that.
Okay.
I think that's news.
All right, news.
That is news. That is news. All right, Chris and Kevin. Australian goat farmer mourns last of his flock killed by dingoes with 48-hour drunken bike ride.
That's a lot to unpack.
Tuesday for them.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So let's go news.
What do you think?
Yeah, let's go news.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nope.
Stupid goats. No. Right. And there was, you know what? And the one thing is, as Kevin just said, there's a lot to unpack there. There's a good clue.
Yeah.
If there's too many things happening.
Yes.
You know, there's always something.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Tony, you ready?
Yes, sir.
You know, this man has won a Grammy Award.
Yeah, that's my main man.
All right, here we go. Tony and Richard Marks. Whiskey cured my coronavirus.
Huh?
Whiskey. Hold on. I gotta get through it. Whiskey cured my coronavirus, says Wuhan-based Brit who contracted deadly flu.
What do you think, Tony?
Richard, it's so crazy. It gotta be true.
All right, we'll go true.
There you go.
Of course.
That was true. How about that? Oh, my gosh. All right. Broadcasting legend Orion Samuelson will now read the next three in this round. Okay, everybody's got to stay in this to get this right, okay? So, Tony and Richard may not even have to go here.
We're 2-0.
Right. If Paul and Lauren and Chris and Kevin don't get these right. All right, here we go. Paul and Lauren, here's your headline.
Unpaid $8.41 property tax bill cost a Michigan man his house.
Huh?
So an unpaid property tax
bill of $8.41 cost the man his house.
Hmm.
Wow. Can you believe that? That sounds like something that some government official would actually do.
Very true.
I'm tempted to go with news. What do you think, Laura?
Sure, let's go news. Nice.
Staying alive.
No pun intended.
Chris and Kevin, here's your headline.
Poetry sales soar as political millennials search for clarity.
Oh, boy. That's a ruse.
You going ruse?
Yeah.
I was thinking news, but if you want ruse, let's go ruse.
Son of a gun.
See, you underestimate the millennial and their desire for clarity and poetry all at the same time. All right, hold on. We'll get you your information, Chris. Thank you very much. All right, here we go. This could win it outright for Tony and Richard Marks. Here is your headline.
Chipotle has nurses to ensure workers are really sick, not just hungover.
Speaking about who's doing these headlines?
Orion Samuels, famed broadcaster Orion Samuels.
How many whiskeys in?
He's 80 something years old. Yeah, you know he's been doing this for 70 years.
Well, then all power to him.
Yes, exactly.
Tony, what do you think about this?
Rich, I don't want to say yeah, but I don't want to jinx. I'm going my first thought. It's a ruse.
I'm going to go with you. I agree. It's a ruse.
Oh no! This is an opportunity now.
God,
oh, just open up. No, Chipotle really did do this.
Wow.
Should have stuck with my second thought.
All right, here we go. Paul and Lauren, here's your headline. New Zealand man convicted of assault with hedgehog.
Wow. This is one of those crazy enough to be true things. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's news.
Let's go news.
Wow. Oh, man. Okay, this is good. All right, prepare yourselves, Tony and Richard. This is a disgusting one. Loud fart gives away suspect's hiding spot during search.
Rich, you think that's true, buddy?
I kind of want it to be true. So
I want it to be true. Just
so let's just wish it to be true and see what happens.
For the win.
Yeah. Boom.
No,
yeah.
That's not a win. You guys are still tied.
Yeah, we're still tied.
Yeah. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Paul and Lauren. Canadian businessman says he burned $1 million in cash to avoid paying his ex-wife child support.
Oh.
Gosh. Oof. I almost think I might have heard that, too. I mean, I know it sounds really ridiculous, but I think
the
child support
can
be so much or something. Yeah, he wanted to. Yeah, let's say news.
News. Nice, Paul.
I got to just tell you, if you've either been through a divorce or you've seen Marriage Story, you know that's true. All right, here we go. Tony and Richard, this is to stay alive.
Uh-oh.
This, yeah. I cannot just tell you how absolute, with the kind of gloating and victory dancing you're going to see here if you don't get this right.
Okay.
Here we go.
I kind of want to lose just to see it.
Drunk Celtic fan tried to have sex with taxi, court told.
Have sex with a taxi?
With a taxi.
A cab.
Taxi, yes.
I'm not touching that. You got to drive me, Rich. I refuse to touch it. It's on you.
I'm going ruse.
Is that your final answer?
Yes. Lauren for the win.
Oh, God.
Way to go, Paul.
Way to go, Lauren.
Okay.
I blame myself, Tony.
This man is.
I should have known that some dude would want to have sex with his taxi.
This Richard
I know. It's probably an Uber.
Or Lyft.
Lyft, right.
Oh, dear God. All right, I got to get through the plugs again. Hold on a second, Tony. Everybody is going to get a $75, a pair of tickets to see Sheer Madness, the hilarious murder mystery whodunit that brings audiences into the action. Catch the killer among the actors so the outcome is never the same. Playing at the Mercury Theater Chicago, February 7th through March 29th. Get tickets at mercurytheater.com or 773-325-1700. And the winner gets a $75 certificate from Green Tea Home Services for all your home service needs, including garage door maintenance, air duct purification, carpet cleaning, whatever you need. 800-5-GREEN-TEA or greenteaservices.com. All right. There you have it.
That was fun.
That was quite a moment right there. I thought there were... the one thing I like about News Ruse is you learn things.
You do.
You learn about the awfulness of humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst of humanity.
Right. And you also learn what you always thought was possible, that if a guy farted, the cops would find him. And that's exactly... That's, you know.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. All right. Richard Marx is going to be at the Arcata Theater on Sunday night. Isn't that correct?
It is correct.
That is correct. And you and tickets are available at, is it oshows.com? Is that, do I have that correct? Hold on.
They gave you?
I've lost my plug already. What happened to my plug? Here we go. Stand by. Tickets are available at ArcadaLive.com, actually. ArcadaLive.com, A-R-C-A-D-A Live.com. It's Sunday night at the Arcata, 7 o'clock. Doors open at 6 o'clock. You shot your PBS special there at the Arcata Theater.
You were there.
In St. Charles, yes.
You were there.
That is available on the DVD and also on downloadable because that is a wild show right
yep,
there.
Yep, it was a wild show. And we had Hugh Jackman as one of my guests and J.C. Chassé from NSYNC.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite a night.
Yes, and you told a great story about NSYNC, and I'm going to have you retell that story.
Fine.
In just a few minutes. Okay. But Richard Marx is here, Grammy Award winner, 30 million albums sold, one of the great rock stars ever in the history of rock star or pop stardom, and he's from Chicago originally, and he's back home for a couple of days as he gets ready for his show up in St. Charles. And maybe there's a show in Minneapolis tomorrow night, too, but let's just say you're here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, that's the way we're
going. I'm
here,
and I'll be in St. Charles on Sunday. That's all
that counts. Unless people want to go up to Minneapolis tomorrow and see it. I don't know.
It's not far.
I could do that as well. All right, all of that coming right. But first, let's check in right now. Here's Kim Gordon. She's got the WGN News. Richard Marx is in the studio with us. He's got a new album out called Limitless. It drops tomorrow. And this is one of the hits from that particular.
Looking through the last 10 days of text you sent. Wondering if all of what you said is what you meant. I guess it's over now, but you never gave a reason why. I guess it wasn't worth the work, cause you never even said goodbye. And I should just give you up.
So this particular single that you've got out has got a pretty sexy video attached to it. It's interesting. Now the whole video world that you guys are in,
yeah,
in the pop music scene,
yeah,
it's no longer the MTV.
No,
it is no longer the VH1.
No,
it is now the YouTube.
It's the YouTube. Yeah. And it's the socials. It's the social medias.
Right. And then and probably more people see them now than maybe at the height of MTV. It was a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, but since that moment, I'll bet you that more people see them in a lot of ways.
I think probably. When I see the view counts on especially some of the old videos,
mm-hmm.
I'd have to look it up, but like the video for Right Here Waiting is something like 700 million views or something ridiculous.
that is pretty ridiculous.
It's something like that. It's crazy. I'm probably exaggerating because I've told you a million times not to exaggerate, but yeah, I mean, I think it's still important in a much smaller way, but I still think it's important to have visuals out there to promote your stuff.
Do you like doing the videos?
No, I hate doing videos. I always did, though. I always hated it. It was so boring. I made a few videos that I'm really proud of. I thought the Hazard video was really well done. It was like a little mini movie, and I liked a couple of the videos where I'd have a couple of friends, you know, involved. So the video for that clip you just played, the snippet, Another One Down, was I didn't love doing it because it was a lot of sitting around waiting, but all my sons made appearances in it. A couple of friends. This new video for Front Row Seat, which comes out tomorrow, which I'll post on our socials tomorrow, is, you know, stars my wife, Daisy Fuentes, and
your dog, Betty Davis.
My dog, Betty Davis, and my band, and Matt Scannell's in it because Matt co-wrote the song with me. And it's a really, really fun video. I'm really excited for people to see this new video.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's got a feel. You said it to me last night. You've got this feel in it that is... it's very comfortable. There's a sort of an era. You see a lot of country crossover artists doing it now, where it's just sort of it's a party scene, essentially.
Yeah.
And not a party scene on a boat with Becca and right. Pitbull, but right. it's a party scene, you know, like of family and friends being together and stuff like that. It's just very comfortable.
Yeah. It's I think it's just a really, it's a fun song, and so we wanted the video to be really uplifting and fun, and we shot, you know, most of the stuff with, all the stuff with me and Daisy is right down the street from our house in Malibu, and it's almost like a little day in the life. I mean,
now, why didn't you shoot it in your house?
We did.
Oh, right down, oh, I thought you said it was right down the street, because I thought, all right.
Well, we shot some in the house.
Yeah.
On the, at the beach house, the, where we live most of the time, and then...
Mm-hmm. In case there's a real estate agent awesome. Listening, go ahead. Yeah.
And then this place 5 minutes away, which is called Westward Beach, which is Point Dune, basically. And you'll see in the video, it's the most spectacular view.
Yeah, it's
and
beautiful.
We, and we hike there two or three times a week.
You know, what's interesting, too, is that you're using drone technology in it, too,
yeah.
which I thought was really cool.
Well, I requested that. It wasn't initially in the production, and I said, look, it's not that much more expensive to do, and if you get a great operator, and it to me, it totally made the video. Those right. The drone shots are so unbelievable.
Actually, you know what's really funny? As a you know, I'm a big expert in cinema now because I do this yeah. podcast with Richard Roper. But I
one of the top podcasts of the year.
Yes, that's true. That is true. The 2019 into 2020. There is there's a shot, an ocean shot
yeah.
that I have never seen on film before.
Yeah,
that is in that video.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking to myself, why hasn't anybody done that before?
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Nick Spanos, by the way, is the guy that directed this and the last clip, and he's a really wonderful filmmaker in L.A. He's done a lot of short films and videos, and great photographer. And he just makes it easy. I just say, you know, it was his whole concept, and he just wanted Daisy and me to show.
How long
up.
Does it take to shoot? Because that's what a 3.5 minute video. Or
I mean,
whatever
it was. Yeah, it was 3.5 minute video. We shot the first day of performance and cutaway shots. It was maybe 5 hours, 6 hours tops. And then the next day was just me and Daisy at the house and at the beach for 4 hours.
Good.
It
All right.
Was like, it wasn't
10
it wasn't
hours and you're out.
Yeah.
It's not like the old days. How long did it take right here waiting? Do you remember?
Oh, God.
Like 6 weeks?
Yeah, something like that. No, it was like probably 3 full days of, you know, 18-hour days.
Yeah.
And, yeah, back then it was arduous.
Well, 2 of the hours was getting her hair together,
no
right?
Kidding.
Wasn't that the thing?
No kidding.
To get the mane going?
No,
the
it
Richard
was,
Marks
it
mane?
Was pretty quick to get the hair going, but then once the sweat started, that it was maintaining the hair. That was a team.
Can I just ask you a question? I mean, people will remember Richard Marks from that era.
Yeah.
The gigantic, it was like a lion. I know there was, you were once on the Johnny Carson show. I'm sure they're running it on Antenna TV, the reruns of Carson, that they're literally, it looks like it's 60 pounds of hair
yeah.
on your head.
Yeah.
How hot was that to have on your head?
Hot in a sexy way or
no I know the ladies kind of liked I don't know did ladies I've always been conflicted by this that you know if women want to be with a guy who's got better longer more luxurious
my
hair than they have.
My experience is that they did.
Oh, interesting. We'll be right back with Richard Marks. But first, Lauren Lapka's got the traffic and the weather. Richard Marks is joining us in the studio right now. This is his new single Limitless from the album Limitless, available tomorrow.
Ours, whatever we want it to be, pour it down all over me. I'm lost, I'm found. I hold you like a mystery. I'll meet you where no one else can see.
Limitless, Richard Marks. That's the title track of his new album that drops tomorrow. And it's found where all fine albums are sold, Downtown Records and Tapes, right? Isn't that
yes.
where it is? That's
yes.
That's where we're going to get it. Rose Records. Where else can we find it?
Virgin? Rose Records, yeah.
Rose Records
that's
and Virgin.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
On the internet, where all music is bought and sold and stolen. But it's different now. I mean, there was a moment where singer-songwriters like yourself, because this is your whole business.
Yeah.
That there was a moment where everything was being stolen and there was no money left.
Right.
And you weren't selling records, and you weren't selling tapes, and you weren't selling CDs. You were selling stuff that moved on to Napster and all the rest of it, and YouTube is another place where people were getting their music.
Yeah.
It's changed a little bit, though. It's kind of working its way back.
Yeah, now instead of getting nothing for our music, we get 0.0000001 cent.
But it's something.
But it's something.
Yes. And it is, but there's still radio play, right? And there's internet. There's internet downloads.
Yeah, the internet downloads are, you know, sort of like the last saving grace. There are actually, believe it or not, there are still people that still buy CDs from Amazon or wherever. Mm-hmm. But it's really, you know, the Spotify and Pandora world, you know, especially Pandora has been pretty good to me. So I on one hand, I can't complain, but it's not about me. I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about the generation of young songwriters who are just not being able to make a living, even when they have a successful song. And if you want to Google, you know, this topic, you'll see, you know, people like Pharrell, you know, on these massive songs, making a pittance, you know, compared to what they would have been making. Well, I mean, it's just like a struggling songwriter could sort of make a decent living by having a hit here and there, like even a top 30 hit or whatever. Now that's like, you know, my son Lucas said, you know, now if I'm lucky enough to, you know, get somewhat of a song that gets played, I might be able to buy a case of Nutrageous bars. You know?
That's right. And he's a writer and a producer.
Yeah.
Right. So that was where the real money is. So what's happened to the economy of music?
It's all touring, because it's the one thing you can't steal.
But people have to fall in love with the song to want to go to the tour.
That's for an emerging artist. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a, it's tricky. You know, I mean, I'm, again, I can't be more grateful to have a catalog of songs that keeps me available to be on the road and have people come to see me play because they want to hear the songs of the last 32 years. But if I just had one song or two songs, maybe, that's tricky.
Yes. I would say that is true.
But there are people doing it. There are artists out there that are, you know, doing gigs that really only had one hit or two hits. So they somehow make it work.
So you are, it's an interesting thing about your business model here, Richard Marks, is that you are now primarily a touring artist, right? I mean, you've got this album out. You had an album two years ago. When you met me,
it was the opposite.
Right.
I was barely touring, and I was mostly just in the studio making records for other people and writing songs for other people and writing, you know, doing my own stuff. And I wasn't touring that much, and it's completely flipped in the last 12 years, 13 years since I met you.
So do you feel, but the touring stuff is it still fun and
more
invigorating?
Fun than ever. I'm having more fun performing now than I ever did before. Part of it is this feeling of just really being there because I want to be there, because I have a love for it that I never had before, especially doing these solo acoustic shows mixed in with band shows. I love the band shows. It's a blast, and you've seen the band show, and it's fun. It's just a party.
Yes.
But so is the solo acoustic show, and it's unlike any other solo acoustic show I've ever seen, because the way I engineer it is that I'm not talking about, you know, what I was going through when I wrote this. Nobody cares. It's like I try to make this 1,000, 1,200, 1,400 people, whatever, in those theaters feel like they came over to my house and were sitting in my living room, and I pour a martini and I just hang out and tell them stories and play them songs.
And you actually do pour a martini.
I do. I always have a martini.
He's a martini on stage. This is, you know, you're kind of the follow-on. I was more of Dean Martin, I think, than Sinatra.
He was my hero. Dean was like, if you look at, just go Google pictures of Dean Martin, he's the happiest person you've ever seen.
Right.
In the history of ever.
Right. Well, that's when you Google the pictures, that does appear to be the case.
He's just having fun, and that's what I'm doing too. And the martini is just a side thing. I do love a martini,
but it is a real martini.
It's a real martini.
Unfortunately, I have seen this in action, and I've actually helped make the martini, and then I can't get out from backstage.
See?
And there you are. I don't know how you're able to do it.
I enjoy a martini.
Yes, I understand. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the artists that you have worked for too,
okay,
that you've written for. for, yeah, because that's a big, you know, a gigantic piece of the business here. And there's that, you know, we talked about NSYNC.
Yeah.
And you wrote one of their biggest hits of
This
all time.
I Promise You, yeah.
Yeah, This I Promise mm-hmm. You. And one of my favorite moments, because you had an amazing, you know, you've filled football stadiums throughout your career. You had one of the last great careers of music, right? You hit right at the moment where you could, you know, put out multiple platinum records, and you could play stadiums, and you could make a living doing mm-hmm. that, yeah. a very nice living yeah. doing that. And then like, you know, like you said, like your kids now, it's almost an impossible situation yeah. to be in. Mm-hmm. And to other great, and there's such great acts, such great artists out there right now.
Yeah.
But you had a moment when you were writing. What year did you write that song for NSYNC?
99, I guess.
Right. Right about there.
They were the biggest group on the planet. They'd had their first album, which just went crazy. And this was their second album. Mm-hmm. And they reached out to me, and I wrote a song kind of that night and pitched it to them, and they loved it, and then they said, would you like to come and produce it as well, which means, you know, go into the studio and make the record. So I worked with them for 3 days and nights, and it was a blast. They're such classy guys, total pros, these young kids. I mean, they were kids,
right?
And they were, their work ethic was amazing, and it was a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
Except leaving the studio when some hot girl told me that her mother was in love with me.
Because you went out the front door of the studio. They had to go through like a cavern to get out, yeah. just to get away from their fans.
They were going through secret passageways because there were all these girls camped out in the parking lot. I was just going out the front door, right. getting in a car, going back to the hotel.
And you got recognized, though.
I did.
Yes.
Because her mom dug me.
That's nothing more humiliating than that. I get that, too. My grandmother loves you. What was the biggest hit, biggest moneymaker hit of the ones you've written for other people?
Probably that one. Better Life for Keith Urban. That was 6 weeks at number one on the country charts.
Yeah.
I've written three hits with Keith that he's taken. One was top five and two number ones, Long Hot Summer and Better Life. Those were great. But This I Promise You was just, I think it was number one on the AC chart for 13 weeks in a row, something like that.
Now,
I heard a little banjo music. I heard a little Keith Urban.
Yeah, here we go. There's a little Keith Urban for you.
Friday night and the moon is high. I'm wide awake just watching you sleep. And I promise you, you're going to have more than just the things that you need. Just starting now, and I know somehow paradise is coming. Someday, baby, you and I are gonna be the ones. Good luck.
Richard Marx is going to be at the Arcata Theater Sunday night, arcatalive.com. If you want tickets to that, see him.
I might need to do that song that night.
You might have to.
I haven't
to do
played Better
song.
Life in a while. I usually do Long Hot Summer in my little portion of the show where I do songs I wrote for other people, but I might have to bust out Better Life.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure, buddy.
Yes, thank you.